You're listening to ESPN 100.3 FM, KLRZ, La Rose, New Orleans, and the River Region.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill. Local sports, national sports. The G-Cat is on it.
Oh, you made a wise choice, my friend.
Now, settle up for a tall glass of sports talk. Here's the Sports Hangover with Gus Kattengill.
We'll talk a little bit more about the Pels win at 2:45 with Dino Hansen, Boogie Cousins on that defensive lapse.
Ball movement was pretty good this game. First half, our energy was incredible. For the most of the first half, a little bit of the second. Defensively, we were pretty solid, but we can't keep having these letups throughout the game.
Yes, and then we still have to talk about your New Orleans Saints, Drew Brees. How about that touchdown, Jason? Did the stretch over the goal line? Did you know he practices, not exactly that, but does some exercises to help that?
I do box jumps every Monday and visualize that when I'm doing them. There you go. That's my training. So a little visual into my training regimen for leaps like that.
Have you, do you do box jumps, Chase?
All the time.
Do you
30 before the show.
Do you know what a box jump is?
Yeah, of course. Okay. You jump on the box.
Well.
Have you ever done a box jump?
No.
Probably not. I can't imagine that.
Boxes are high.
Oh. Well, you got to work to get up those boxes.
Well.
Where's your ups, man?
There's no ups.
Low center of gravity.
No, yeah, I've learned to just be the spot-up shooter.
Okay.
We're good.
Okay.
We're good. There's no dunking. There's no dunking here.
No.
So what do I need to work on the ups for?
You know, Muggsy Bogues and Spud Webb, they were pretty short. They used to dunk
gifted.
A lot.
Gifted. No, they were also gifted.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I'm sorry.
They were giving jumping ability and speed and basketball skill. I'm just thinking, right here. Open. Yo. Woo-woo.
And then nobody throws you the ball.
Well, that's why I just said, woo-woo.
Yeah, because then nobody throws you the ball.
Well, when they do... I am ready to spot up just right there.
Right there.
Right there.
Then here comes the rebound.
Well, not if I make it.
Well, the chances.
How about the Tigers? Did you like that performance from LSU?
How about that?
Did you think it was going to be that big? 40-24? It's almost like the beginning of those 30 for 30 ESPN movies, Jason. What if I told you? Right? You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
What if I told you the Tigers scored 40 points and not a single receiver caught a pass? You can't make that up.
It's a weird way to get 40 points.
Nine
nowadays.
Catches. Geis had one. Moore, three. Moreau, one. Williams, four. Running backs, fullbacks. No receivers. Is that weird? You scored 40 points and not a receiver caught a ball.
I didn't think they were going to put up 40.
40. Chris Blair, LSU Sports Radio Network.
Two receivers right, one to the left. They'll fake the pitch to the right. Coming from behind, Arden Key going to knock the ball loose. Patterson goes down hard, falling on it at the 40-yard line as an Ole Miss offensive lineman to save the football. But Arden Key absolutely separated Patterson from the football. Now they'll give it to Geis. He'll try the near side. Geis got a little bit of a wall. Now he's across midfield. Angling near side, 30, 20. Caught from behind inside the 10 and tripped up. Edling lines him up quickly, gives to Geis. Geis trying to find something off the right edge. Cuts back at the 3, the 2, the 1. Diving in. Touchdown, Tigers! Darius Geis picks up his 6th rushing touchdown of the season on a gain of 7 yards, and the Tigers strike quick. Geis and Williams now will be in the backfield. They'll motion Williams out. Now they'll swing it to him on the pass far side. Williams up across the 45, breaks a tackle into Ole Miss territory. 30, 20, Darrell Williams, one man trying to force him out and does so inside the Ole Miss 10. They're going to mark him out just inside the 6-yard line of the Rebels. Huge play on the swing. A fake the reverse. Patterson stands in the pocket, throws down the field, and going to be picked off. Grant Delpit has it at the 23-yard line. Delpit with his first interception of the season. Etling goes out. Now he'll sprint to his right. Etling fakes the throw, dives towards the end zone, and touchdown, LSU! We have seen Danny Etling all season give up the body to get the extra yard. He does it there for his first rushing touchdown of the season. And the handoff goes to Geis. Geis with very impressive first half of action. Now loose across the 40. Far sideline into Ole Miss territory. One man trying to get him down inside the 30 and does so, but not before he reaches the 24-yard line of Ole Miss. Shovel pass. J.D. Moore up the middle. Breaks a tackle at the 5. Lunges into the end zone. Touchdown, LSU. Patterson, empty backfield. Shotgun snap. Slings it, and it hit in the hands, and then on the tip drill, intercepted. John Battle has it. Throwing off his back foot, looking for the far sideline, and making a grab inside the 30. Did they say it was taken away? It was. It was intercepted. On the far sideline, third pick of the night. LSU is taking it away. Kevin Tolliver. Etling going to roll out. Tosses this one high in the air. Waiting for it. Morrow's got it at the 45-yard line of Ole Miss. He's by his lonesome down the far sideline. 10-5. Touchdown, Tigers.
I want to know who does all the clapping. You hear the clapping in the background?
Who's getting paid to clap?
I don't know. I think we should do that. Every time I make a solid point, I want some applause.
You want a lot of stuff.
I'm just saying, because it's something that maybe you can consider here. I mean, it makes the bites a lot better, don't you think? I mean, they're clapping during good plays. When I make a good point and a good, and I do a segment where I don't mispronounce and say Detroit Packers, I want applause.
Notice you've never gotten applause.
Moving forward, Tigers now 6-2. Now won three straight SEC games. And yes, Foster Moreau's a tight end, I get it. But no receivers, like, you know, WR in front of the player's name. It's just crazy. 40 points, not a receiver caught a ball. You look at the rest of the schedule. Bye week this week, Alabama 2 weeks. They're still going to be a double-digit underdog. Stop it. That said, made it a little more interesting than that game to go see what it's going to be like. Arkansas, rough season. Brett Bielema, is he in trouble over there? Tennessee, second to last game. Will Butch Jones be on the sideline? That team's struggling. And then you end against Texas A&M in Baton Rouge. I could see 9-3, Jason. And we said at the beginning of the season, a 9-win season I thought would be a good season in Coach O's first year. And when you think about where they were just a couple weeks ago, you remember, Jason? We started a show on a Monday, and I was like, wow. That loss to Troy, it was burn down everything. Fire everybody. Start from scratch. Fire a leave, a fire O. Canada sucks. What's Canada's offense all about? It takes time. It takes time. You need snaps. You need health. LSU's offensive line was patchwork at best. Now you're starting to find some guys that can actually play a few games in a row, and you're doing it. Look, you're winning, and Darius Guy shows and showed, Jason, when he's healthy, the type of game and player that he can have. I mean, it's unbelievable. 22 carries, 276 yards. Then Williams also had 22 carries, 103 yards. Overall, 393 yards rushing, 55 attempts. Again, though, you completed 9 passes. You only attempted 13. Now, you didn't have to. That's fine. I get it. You can't do that against Bama. And if Bama's the eventual team that you go into, but again, it's not what the season was about. I thought this team needed to reestablish an identity. Who are they under Coach O? And as I've said, the quarterback playing is not going to be the quarterback that leads you to a shot at a national title. Probably is Brennan. We'll see. Then he's going to need snaps in a year to grow. I said 2 years. Maybe while he's a sophomore, junior. I get you one 40-24, but good teams, good defenses. You're not going to win many games not having a receiver complete a single pass. That's all I'm saying. It's a little difficult when it comes to that. We'll talk to Marlon Favorite next segment a little bit about this game here as well and the Saints. One of the things that I want to bring up when it comes to the black and gold in that win, too, that stood out, was some of the things that you're going to hear Coach Payton talk about this week that they need to work on. Jason, for a while, that blocked PAT. if you remember last week, I'll play the bite, find it here in a second. Sean Payton was asked on the 18th things they still need to correct. Jason, pay attention.
Well, look, I think this. I think our third down numbers offensively have to get better. I think our communication defensively and eliminating some of the big plays that we've given up even in the last game. I think our field goal protection has struggled. It's going to cost us in a game. Our penalties on special teams are going to cost us in a game.
Field goal protection. Didn't he say that? It's going to cost you in the game. And it almost did. The block PAT, man, for a while, it was haunting. After the game.
The pictures we get look like, you know, there was pressure in the left A-gap, and that's where it was last week. So typically in our league, it'll keep coming until you stop it.
He wasn't happy, Jason, a lot about that. But as Coach Payton says, hey, look, at the end of the day, they did find a way to overcome and win the game.
It's a real good football team, and it's a hard place to win, especially when you lose in the turnover ratio. I mean, I bet that's happened once or twice in 12 years here. In fact, I know it's happened just two times in 12 years. They win the turnover ratio and still lose the game at Lambeau Field. That's happened, I think, once or twice in 12 or 13 years. So, look, we were able to overcome that, and that was significant.
One of the other things of note that we will be paying attention to this week as well is Larry Warford went out with an abdominal strain, and Sene Okelemete had to step on in. Drew Brees yet again saying that Okelemete just, you know, guard, tackle, center, you name it. Guy steps in and played well.
Sineo is one of those unsung heroes, a guy that has played every position on the offensive line, can come in at a moment's notice to handle it, and doesn't blink. You know, just it's those types of guys that I think make your team unique and special. And there's not a guy who's more respected or appreciated, certainly from my perspective, than him. And every time he's stepped in and been asked to do something, you know, usually it's a hard job, and he does it really well.
Indeed. Quick break. We come back. Marlon Favorite. We'll speak with him of the LSU Sports Radio Network as well, part of the broadcast crew. Pre-game and post-game, we'll chat with him, his takes on it. Also, the Saints. He loves the phrase and the term, Jason. Inside the trenches, right? I want to see what if he saw what Nick Underhill was talking about, what the Packers did to kind of open up some of those running lanes, and how impressed was he with LSU did on the defense and offensive line as well. You can't rush for almost 400 yards if the guys up front aren't blocking and creating lanes. At Big Fave 504 is the way to follow over on Twitter. Marlon Favorite. Is that you clapping? Oh. Oh, there we go. Oh, Joey's giving me a clap. Thank you, Joey. Thank you.
I don't think it was directed towards you, though.
No, that was towards me. That was a good opening segment.
No.
You know, again. If the LSU play-by-play can have claps, no. Then I should have claps.
That's not an opening segment. It's a rejoin.
Marlon Favorite, how are you?
Doing fine, man. Happy Monday, brother.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Happy Monday to you as well. Tigers, we'll start with them, 40-24. It's interesting, don't you think? 40 points, not a receiver caught a ball. Tight end was the only other non-running back that had a pass reception. But I guess when you have the running game that LSU has, you stick with it and you go with it. It's just funny because they were supposed to throw the ball more this year. But again, you got number five, and boy, he looked the healthiest he had all season long. 276 yards rushing, only one touchdown. It's just nuts when you think of the numbers he puts up.
Oh, no doubt. And as you mentioned, he wasn't at 100%. He might have played the game at about 75-80%, and that's scary because, again, he set a record. Five is that guy, man. He's a really good athlete, great vision. And 28 as well, man, holding it down for the West Bank Marrero, man. Darrell Williams had a great game too, man. It's very rare you get two running backs on the same team that break records, man. So it was a really great night for the Tigers.
I said it going into the break, inside the trenches, a phrase you love to use because you think it's important. How, when you looked at that game, what did you see from the LSU offensive line that maybe you hadn't seen in the past? Look, I know Ole Miss's defense has been suspect, hadn't been able to stop the run as well. But at the end of the day, you still got to make the blocks, and you still got to, you know, go out there and do it. And look, 150, 200 yards is different than almost 400. There were seven yards short to 400 yards.
Right, exactly. What I see out of that offensive line more than anything else is improvement. They were executing their blocks. They were finishing their blocks. It was one play where they ran an inside trap play, and Darius Geis was able to go off the pulling tight end and the pulling tackle through the gap, man. And the way that they executed that was really great. Improved, man. This was an area for LSU that they saw that they really, really, really needed improvement on. And they were able to do it, man. So I'm just ecstatic that inside the trenches, hello, somebody, finally stepped up to the plate.
One of the things, Marley, that I think that also stands out more than anything is the play of this defense here as well. Continue to get turnovers, and it stinks. Shea Patterson injured in the game, came back, and apparently, you find out later, played on torn ligaments in his knee. What a PCL tear is what he had, so he could be done for some time here as well. But the opportunities, when you're there, you have to make them. And it's a good sign, I don't even think for this year as well, but I just think for the future, you're starting to see some playmakers in there in a young secondary.
No doubt, man. You talk about Greedy playing well, just in man coverage. Battle looked great. I mean, that secondary all together looked really, really, really good. And moving forward, the fact that they're young, it just lets you know how good LSU is going to be in the upcoming year. So, man, I really think defensively, they started off a little slow up front with the D-line, but eventually Key turned on it on the ignition and started to turn up, man, getting some big sacks. So, hey, man, I'm extremely proud of
it. One of the things that I also thought was interesting in this game was, I guess, really from the get-go, LSU kind of established a presence in this game. And it's something I know you've been talking about the last couple of weeks to – not only you, Booger McFarland, a bunch of ESPN analysts that used to play for LSU as well, saying, get back to playing LSU football. And is it physical on both sides of the ball that you are seeing that's been a difference?
Yes, both sides. You're right. I've definitely seen a really big difference in the Tigers in that area. And moving forward in SEC play, it's good to start peaking at this time. So the fact that they're peaking at this time really sets them up for a really good bowl game.
What else stood out to you in the game?
Oh, well, what really stood out to me more than anything else, again, the running game from both running backs. The blocking, of course, by the offensive line really stood out. The ability to make plays. I mean, Shea Patterson's a top-tier quarterback in the SEC, and the fact that we were able to pick him off the way we did spoke volumes, man. But, I mean, if I had to pick one thing that stuck out more than anything was Darius Geis, man, coming off of the injury and playing the way he did, just really setting the tone for the team. And, man, he has a – going to be a really good, nice NFL career for him.
No doubt about it. But speaking with Marlon Favorite, at BigFave504 is the way to follow over on Twitter, pregame, postgame, for the LSU Sports Radio Network he's a part of as well. Bye week for LSU and then Bama. Look, I look at this and look, it's a nice win. I'm not complaining, Marlon. Again, though, you have a win and you put up 40 points and receivers are not involved. I'm just looking at it for the next game, and you're not going to run on Alabama. They hadn't done it with Leonard Fournette. They hadn't done it when they had a better offensive line. It's not going to happen. What do you do this week? Do you work on it more? Do you try to maybe use the screen and use the passing game with the running backs and try to use them in that sort of style? And does Canada maybe put them at, you know, I don't know, in the slot, line them up as a receiver? Do you try to do some wrinkles that way? Because the running backs can catch the ball. You get what I'm getting at. They can't just line up and expect to just carry the ball 55 times against Alabama.
Right. I think what we can expect out of a Canada's offense going against Alabama is something we never seen before. As you notice, he's doing his shifts, doing them each game, but it's different plays that he's running. So I honestly don't think we saw all of Matt Canada's offense yet. And I think he's really going to pull out all the gadgets for Alabama, in my opinion. So I think if they continue to keep teams off balance with the trading and the tight ends and the shifting of tackles and all of that good stuff, I think we're really – I think this team puts up a fight against Alabama.
All right, we'll talk a little bit closer when it comes to that here in a sec. I do want to get your quick take overall on the SEC. You look at the standings, you look at the teams that are left, and I said, look, I could see a 9-3 finish by LSU. You know, don't take care of business against Alabama. It's a tall task, I think, this year, Marlon. But an Arkansas team that is in trouble with Bet Bielema, Tennessee, you don't even know if Butch Jones is going to be the coach there by the time these two teams played, and you end at A&M. What would a 9-3 finish, you think, mean, considering where this team was not even a month ago?
I think what it means is, for one, this team has improved. This is definitely a team that LSU, everybody didn't think LSU was on this page at the beginning of the year. They didn't think LSU can do it. So 9-3 means Outback Bowl, you know, potentially Sugar Bowl if the cards fall right. And that's a win for the Tigers. I mean, again, a team that's very, very young, started over 11, played and started over 11, between 11 and 23 guys that are freshmen. So I really think LSU has a lot to look forward to.
Quick question, or I guess just take on it here as well. I mentioned Bielema, Jones, hot seat guys. I was listening earlier this morning, Sports Today, Charles and Jimmy out saying, hey, look, you know, there's stories out there that Arkansas may want to, you know, they released what the buyout was. It's not 15, it's $5 million. They may be interested in Gus Malzahn at Auburn, who's getting tired of every Saturday's being questioned. He's not Nick Saban and stuff like that. It's just, it's interesting. And then you look at Jim Eckelwain over in Florida and the story today that says that his players and family members are getting death threats. I'm like, I don't know. I think people have gotten a little carried away with the importance of winning SEC football, just football in general and stuff. I mean, when you are giving family and players death threats, that's just, you know what I'm getting at? It's just, it's a little ridiculous.
Oh, no doubt, man. It gets out of hand sometimes. And it's a big job that these collegiate coaches have when they lose, man. You don't really want to hear that from fans. And it is tough for them. So, I can understand why they would want to get out of that environment.
Yeah, it's silly when you think about it. You know, McElwain saying in his press conference today that his family's getting death threats. I mean, it's insane, man. It's insane. It's a football game, folks. Just remember that at the end of the day. Speaking of football, how about the New Orleans Saints back to the inside of the trenches here? I said the most impressive thing about the win yesterday was they found a way to win an ugly game, and I call it ugly simply because you went down early, two interceptions in the first quarter, things weren't going well, you had to make adjustments. Nick Underhill, the advocate, said, look, the Packers came out and did certain things on the blocking scheme-wise that hurt the Saints' defense in the first half before they made some adjustments. When you're watching that game and you see that, what did you see that the Saints' defense shifted and changed in the second half?
Well, I think the biggest thing that they did defensively on the second half, they added a little spying on the quarterback. He looked a little bit like Aaron Rodgers out there moving around in the pocket. So just delegating the guys to spy him just to kind of keep him in the pocket. Because, I mean, when he was able to break loose, I think this was in the first half, when he was able to break loose on the edge where the defensive end loss contained, and this is when Ken Crowley kind of threw the shoulder in on the, right. on the tackle and they scored a touchdown. That was an adjustment that they needed to make. Somebody needed to have their eyes spying on that quarterback. And that's the tough thing about not having film on a guy. They had some preseason film on him, and they knew, you know, the capability he had at UCLA. So I'm pretty sure that they made that adjustment and pulled off the win. So how about them things?
Yeah, it was interesting. Nick mentioned that the center for the Packers, instead of blocking you, Marlon, the D-tackle, would pass up Sheldon Rankins and go seek out a linebacker to go get. How could something that probably looks simple, you know, just a guy that you're expecting to go block you, change how the different looks and I guess assignments of what you're supposed to be doing change?
Yeah, well, the responsibility changes. That's what ends up happening when the center goes to the linebacker. Sometimes the play is going that way, and it's important for them to kind of dip over there. So, you know, that's pretty much how it goes up front.
Yeah, no doubt. Even Cam Jordan in this article saying, look, they were trying to set the edge and they're running inside zones and it kind of bottled up things. And they were doing all kinds of, you know, blocking scheme differences. Have you ever had a game where I don't know, you had to make adjustments like that from the very beginning. How long does that take?
Well, what happens is when they do shifts like that, you know, you usually either the defensive tackle has to shoot that gap to make sure that he gets that gap, or put a hand on the center so he doesn't get a free release to the linebacker. You don't want your linebacker to if he gets blocked and you don't mm-hmm. make the tackle, then the running back into the second level. And I think that's what happened. I think the guys got washed one play, and Green Bay was able to run it right up the middle for the touchdown. Those things can happen inside the trenches, literally, because guys lose gap contain, or they get washed out of their gaps, stuff like that. So it's a really unique scheme by an offense.
No doubt. That is Marlon Favre, a big Fave 504, joins us on Mondays and Fridays. Talk a little Tigers and Saints, and would you have ever thought that, I don't know, just especially after those first 2 weeks, Saints would be in first place of the NFC South, my friend.
Hello, you see them rolling, man. I guess those Saints are marching in.
There you go. Marlon Favre, right? Big Fave 504 is a way to follow on Twitter. Thank you, bud.
Thanks for having me. Have a blessing, bro.
Yep, for sure. Appreciate it. Jason Trosclair. Any takes over on Twitter from the opinion polls that they have, other than words that apparently I said? I did not say the Chicago Lions. Jay Fowl on Twitter, assuming that I'm going to say the Chicago Lions. Is that what he's assuming?
I mean, you might as well.
I didn't say it, though. Nope.
No.
All right.
I mean, you may have said it. I could go look at, as Sean Payton says, we'll go look at the tape.
Game balls, attaboys, and also...
Yeah, the other question was...
Who needs to have a chat with coach?
Yeah, but also it was... the other tweet was, is it still too early to be talking about the playoffs?
Yes.
The Saints, we have 504 Slim that responded with, yeah, it's too early. Nasty habit of offensive turnovers, inconsistent defense, and offensive line injuries creates a combination of concerns. So,
Ooh. Yeah. Okay.
Are you comfortable yet with saying playoffs? I'm not. We're only one game above the Panthers.
No, look, I hear you. But you take a look at the division right now. I would argue they're playing as good a football as the other teams. See, here's the thing, though. That Patriots game is still an anomaly to me. I don't think that's the Panthers. You know, like in school, right? It's the curve, right? When you grade in the curve, you take the worst and the highest.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it is? That's kind of like I look at it. Like, I think the Panthers are probably in the middle of what you saw yesterday at Chicago, where they couldn't score and couldn't do anything on offense. And again, that's why I keep saying, the Bears defense, 5 sacks yesterday. And it's very easy and quick to be able to say, hey, well, the Panthers offense stinks. Okay, they do at times. Then they go to New England and put up 33, and then they score some points the week after that. That's the thing that I guess kind of confuses me about Carolina. They won 23-3 to start the season, 9-3, lose to the Saints 34-13, 33 in a win, 27 in a win at Detroit. They beat the Patriots and Lions in a row, lost to the Eagles 28-23 in a good Thursday night game, but they lost to them. And then yesterday to put up 3 points, Jason. 3. Mitch Trubisky was coming into town this week. 4 of 7, 107 yards. 4 of 7. 4 passes in an NFL game they completed. Now they rushed for 68 yards. How did they win? You know how? 14 points out of those 17 came on defensive turnovers that scored touchdowns.
Game changer.
Pick sixes, fumble sixes. There you go. That's how the game changes. Cam Newton. We had 211 yards and they rushed for 108, but those turnovers cost him. Sports Hangover continues next on ESPN New Orleans. Sports Hangover continues. Head coach Sean Payton. Defense didn't start out well, made the adjustments later.
You know, unfortunately, we were getting off the field on the third downs, and we had a couple different coverage looks, kind of fooled them into a zero look, which really was a bail, and, you know, Kenny comes up with the interception. So, good play, good job.
There you go, Jason. Good play, good job. Good enough? Good play, good job for you. There we go. How did she even know that's what I was looking for?
Oh, I just know.
All right. Quarterback Drew Brees. No win.
I find a lot of ways to win. Pretty resilient. Obviously, the way this game started, you know, they go right down the field, get a couple big plays and score. And then, unfortunately, I turned the ball over twice, you know, when we had good drives going and probably took points off the board for us. So, you know, disappointing start, and yet, you know, we hung tough and knew that we were going to have our opportunities. And offensively, you know, I felt like we had good balance. I felt like there were some things there that, you know, we knew we could, I don't say take advantage of, but just, you know, create some rhythm and sustain drives and then get points. And, you know, despite the deficit at halftime, I think we all felt like if we played our style of football and took care of it, then we'd find a way to win this game, and we did.
Yeah, saw the difference of a winning quarterback as opposed to, the quarterbacks that did not win.
I threw a pick.
Around the NFC South we go. Jameis Winston as the Bucs fell to the Bills.
Hopefully we can stop it before we get 3-5. I mean, this is a great chance for this team to show how resilient we are. And I believe that we got guys in our locker room that are going to step up. You know, so I'm not worried. I got faith in our team. More importantly, in the man upstairs, I know we're gonna keep battling. We just got to find a way to win. It's challenging, but we got to find a way.
30-27, the final there, of course, last night. New alarm. And the Atlanta Falcons came up short, Jason, on your New England Patriots, making it official that the Saints would be atop of the division in the NFC South. Matt Ryan?
Every year is different. Played in this league long enough to know that, you know, one, it's hard to win games, and two, it's a tall task to be productive week in and week out. It takes a lot of hard work, and so we haven't been as productive as I think we're capable of being. From a player standpoint, I feel like it comes down to missed opportunities. I think that's been the, you know, we've sounded like a little bit of a broken record for the, you know, first couple of weeks of the season. But when we get our chances, we've got to make plays, and we haven't done a good job of that.
Indeed. And, of course, the 17-3 final in Chicago, Cam Newton on the loss.
I'm disappointed. Disappointed is, you know, it's no excuse not to come in and find a way to win this football game. We squandered that opportunity, but I'm not feeling sorry for myself, nor am I expecting anybody else to. You know, life goes on, and we just got to get ready for our next opponent.
There you go.
His post-game fashion is very disappointing.
See, you say that. Now, do you wish you could kind of pull that off? Do you want to pull that off?
I don't want to pull it off. No.
I saw a lot of people send me pictures of a character on Sanford and Son.
Rollo. I loved Rollo.
Yeah.
He was a cool dude.
I mean, the outfit's darn near identical.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
The hat, color.
A little bit.
And suit.
You think the Falcons fans are complaining about the fog machine?
So you're
conspiracy?
You're going to be at the Pels Saturday night.
Yeah.
Member of the Kingdom.
Mm-hmm.
It's LeBron James and
That's right.
Cavs come back in. Pels 3-game road trip right now.
I got to be there early to escort him.
No, you don't. A member of the arena security will tell you, sir, excuse me, as LeBron walks.
No, I have a pass.
No,
I can
you
just
don't.
Get through.
You have a certain pass.
Yeah.
Not that kind of a pass.
Well.
See, you could take a charge like I did.
Oh, he won't charge me.
No? All right. Anyway, what I find interesting is this. Would Cam Newton, see, that kind of fashion in the NBA, it flies. Totally flies. I just think it's, you don't see it as much in the NFL, so maybe that's why it stands out.
That's probably what it is.
Yeah. Is it bad, or is it just not seen as much? So we don't know.
It's just, 'cause
it doesn't look cheap, is what I'm getting.
No, it's not cheap at all.
No.
Most people just can't pull that off.
That's what
he
I mean.
Can. And he makes sure that you see it.
Any way you could wear that hat or something like that while you do the game?
I can't afford any of that.
Against Cleveland?
I can't afford that. Are you kidding me? No.
What's that hat go for?
Who knows?
A couple hundred?
How about the shoes? I noticed Newton made sure that his ankles were kind of sticking out a little bit behind the podium.
There is nothing he doesn't do when it comes to the post-game fashion statement that he's not absolutely trying to let you see. That is for sure. Here's the thing about, and that's, and look, I'm having a little fun, but at the same time, it's got to be frustrating if you're a Panthers fan. That team has potential, and he has all the talent in the world, but man, it does come across like there are a lot of other things that maybe just care a little bit more. Just a little bit more. Or is that a wrong assessment? I don't know. I look at his game. I don't see any improvement in his mechanics. You know? I think he understands the game. He's talked about, I've seen interviews where he does talk about certain things of that nature that give you the impression and idea he understands reads defenses and stuff like that. It's not what I'm getting at. It's just some people just have that knack. And the reason I played those bites, because he stands out of the four quarterbacks. Like the other ones are telling you certain specific things that are going, they sound like team leaders. And he's like, I'm not going to get down. This is what it is. I'm moving forward. Life's short. You know, that's not what you want to hear when you're in that locker room and you scored 3 points and against a team that scored 3 points.
Yeah, and making fun of reporters too. Come on.
Well, that's what I'm getting at. It's like, I'm wondering if that act or the attitude wears thin. Here's what I'm getting at. If anybody's ever played in an organized team, you know who the leader is on a team. You just do, right? I mean, you just do.
Yeah, in studio, it's me, the team leader.
Oh, boy. And you want to follow that. You know, it's like you look for that inspiration sometimes. Get tired or whatever, and the guy's like, let's go. We can do this. We can do that. You know? And he may. Man, when he so comes across like it's anything but, doesn't it?
I'll use the pro wrestling term. In pro wrestling, he'd be a great heel. He'd be a great bad guy.
Fantastic.
People would pay money to see him get his butt kicked. You know? It's totally what he is.
Here's Brees. And again, you know, Brian and Elise and I, we go back and forth on Brees. I just think we're so spoiled on what the fans have been able to have here. He's an extension of the head coach.
An ambassador of the city, of the region.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. And look, I get that. That's rare. It's not the norm. And it's not designed by the contract. You know, Barkley said too, I don't have to be your role model. No, he tells me I have to. But in the NFL, especially that position, like there's a story out today, and it was a big story yesterday, right? DeShone Kizer, Pepito, went out before the game. So he was out late on Friday night at a bar. Now they play Pepito Sunday yesterday. He got benched in the game. He's the rookie quarterback. But, you know, Channel 19, I guess in Cleveland, has video of him at a bar 1 a.m. Now he left Notre Dame early. Is he 21? I'm just saying, a lot of people feel that his whole heart and everything else and head's not in. They played terrible against Tennessee. They lost. They're still winless, 12-9. They lost in overtime. He got benched in the game for the second time this season. And that's what I'm getting at. You know? You just, when you're winless, he could just be hanging out, Jason. May not even have had a beverage. But you're seen at a bar. The team hasn't won a game. You get benched because you're playing so bad. And you lose in a 12-9 game where no one's scoring touchdowns. And fans are shelling out $200, $300, $400, $500. They're going to get angry. I mean, it's kind of part of it. I guess is what I'm getting at. And then, like, you have a bite like with Breeze here. And it's something that I was talking about earlier in the show about how this team's starting to show the signs of a team that is learning how to win, finding the right elements to do so. And all I'm saying is, like, when he talks, there's a sense of calm. There's a sense of, okay, we get it. We're going to figure it out. Professionalism, maturity, understanding that I don't hear with Cam. I'm not picking on him. That's been him.
No, we're picking on
him. The guy's got a ton of talent. Ton of talent. I just, I don't think it's maximized. That's all. Here's Breeze on the team learning how to win. Saints, that is.
I wouldn't call us a dominant team, but we're striving to be that type of a team. You know, I mean, I think what I like is that we're encountering a lot of different situations and things in games and finding different ways to win. And I think learning a lot about ourselves in the process, finding what our bread and butter is offensively, defensively, and just continuing to build confidence with these wins.
There you go. That's Drew Brees. We come back, hopefully a win. Last night, build some confidence for the Pelicans. We'll hear what Boogie Cousins, Anthony Davis, Alvin Gentry have to say. Dino joins us to discuss that win. They take on Portland tomorrow in game 2 of a 3-game road trip before coming back home on Saturday to face Pepito's Cleveland Cavaliers.
They're not my Cavaliers.
Well, you're part of the kingdom.
Well, yeah. I'm beneath him. I look up to him.
Oh, my. Sports Hangover continues next.
What's up, Nola? It's Anthony Davis, and we're talking Pelicans basketball on the Sports Hangover right here on ESPN New Orleans.
Coming in to help talk a little bit about your Pelicans, none other than Dino Hanson. And Dino Hoops 11 is the way to follow over on Twitter. Dino, first off, here's Alvin Gentry on the win, and we'll talk about it.
Well, I thought we started out the game playing well. We played well in every game we've been in the first quarter. We played exceptionally well, and then we struggled some in the second quarter. And then the third quarter, our transition defense just weren't very good. And the thing that I told these guys is that this is not a team. You know, I know Luke and I know his team, and it's not a team that's going to ever quit. So I thought they did a great job of fighting their way back in, and they found a combination of guys that, got them going pretty good. But at the end of the day, I told our guys that anytime you can get a win on the road, it's a good win. And obviously there's a lot of things that we can look at as positive, and then there's some things that we got to look at that we got to try to correct.
All right, so let's do that. Positives and things to correct, Dino. For starters, positive, Anthony Davis, 27 points, 14 boards. Cousins, 22 and 10. He called himself Robin to AD's Batman, however you want to look at it. Those two are dominant. At least you saw Holiday with 14, Etwan Moore, 19. So you had an all-the-way round-out effort there. They got up by 22. That's a positive.
Absolutely, Gus. It's a positive. And I know there were a lot of grumbling in that fourth quarter when the Lakers made a run, which you can expect every team to make a run. I love the fact. Let's talk about the key positive, though. We started out the first quarter extremely well, like we have done the first two games of the season, and we were fortunate enough to carry that over in the second quarter. So there is growth and movement in the right direction as opposed to going backwards. The fact that we were extremely intent on getting to the paint early on, and not just AD and Boogie, but Drew. The entire team, you can see there was a point of emphasis of attacking the rim simply because the Lakers did not have any bigs. You and I, of course, we tweeted each other. We didn't have a lot of time to text last night. But that said, when it got to that third quarter, when we were up by 22 at one point, then all of a sudden, everything that we had done productively and positively, it's as if it just completely went out the window. The ball stopped moving. Guys started not rotating any longer than what they were doing in the first half, jacking up shots, one pass and a shot. The movement overall just looked bad, and that allowed the fans to get back in. But at least we don't have to wait 8, 9, 10, 12 games before we get the first win. And I know a lot of people are like, Dino, still, we look bad towards the end. But we fought back when the Lakers made their run, and we were able to go on a 13-2, 11-0 run to finish off the game. And I'll take an ugly W, and I know you will as well, Gus, Saints fans and Pels fans. I'll take an ugly W over a beautiful loss with things to talk about as opposed to being 0-3, we're 1-2.
Anthony Davis on the win.
Man, win is a win. No matter how it is, that stuff we can look at on film and try to correct it, but just to come out with a win, especially on the road. Don't care if it's about 30 or it's about one. You know, we just want to make sure we come out with the win. And like I said, we kept fighting. We let the team come back and get back in the game. So that's on us. But we just kept battling through the whole fourth, and was able to come up with some stops at the end.
Now, Dina, over the weekend, Jameer Nelson signed by the Pelicans. This assessment on what he was able to do, and yeah, because look, you're about to get into it. I want to hear what he wants to say first, and then, because look, I'll be honest with you. He's not on that floor. They don't win the game. It's literally that simple for me, Jameer.
You know, it is what it is. You know, I'm not going to pat myself on the back for coming out and playing, and you know, we got to win that, you know. But the main thing was just going on the court and being ready. Like I say, it's basketball, and it's, you know, basketball wherever you're playing it. You know, intensity was pretty high, especially when they took the lead. And, you know, I've been in pretty much every situation on the court, so it's nothing that, you know, when I was out there, nothing that's going to, like, startle me or scare me.
With four to play, he drove to the basket several times, got a couple assists to Cunningham, Boogie. AD had to flush as well, found an open three. Him being able to calm things down, I think, was the big difference there.
Gus, I couldn't have said it any better. That's what the impact of a true point guard, a floor general, will do for a basketball team. What Jameer came in the game and did yesterday, he brought a sense of calm, he brought a sense of direction and leadership, which is exactly what we know we were getting with Rajon when we saw him during the preseason. And that's the exact same thing that Jameer brought. So no question, Gus, without Jameer being on that floor last night, we don't walk off that floor with the W. And let me tell you, the questions would have been abound, especially after the Earl Watson situation in Phoenix. So Jameer was huge. And this is what you need your point guard to do, Gus. Lead, direct, put guys in position that is going to be effective for them to score, and defensively, right, make the necessary calls and rotations. So absolutely, Gus.
Dina, we'll talk about the Portland game tomorrow and some of the things that else that we saw in this game. We'll have a little bit more time, but I can't go here without another minute before we end the show. But big news out of Phoenix. They dismissed their head coach, Earl Watson, three assistants as well. Eric Bledsoe tweets, "I don't want to be here anymore." Meets the team in the morning. He is sent home. They are going to move him somewhere. He's not playing tonight against Sacramento. Is that a player that the Pels should be on the phone for?
We most certainly should be on the lookout and figure out some kind of way, money-wise, if we can pull it off. Listen, you can never have enough direction and leadership on the team. I thought Eric was trying to get out of there a couple of years ago. If you recall, when it kind of baffled me why LeBron would step in and tell Phoenix, "You need to sign Eric Bledsoe." I'm thinking, that's not my team. So I say that. You remember that?
Well, according to Jason, that's what he should be doing. So, hey.
And Jason is absolutely correct. That Beto is right. You know this.
You can't give yourself a round of applause. There's no giving yourself any clapping. That's ridiculous.
But, yeah, it's definitely somebody we should be looking at. Hopefully we can still figure out a way to claim Jamal Crawford. Ian Clark came up big last night. Drew was actually more effective. He's playing his natural two-guard position. So there were a lot of pluses to take from the game last night. But there are, of course, still some things that we need to work out. And like I tweeted before I ended everything last night, just to make everybody laugh, hey, we are just as good as the Golden State Warriors, who are the NBA champions from last year. We have the same record as them. So
there it is.
Like
Dino Hanson at Dino Hoops 11 is the way to follow over on Twitter tomorrow. We'll talk about the game against the Portland Trail Blazers, game two, a three-game road trip. Thank you, Dino.
Absolutely. Appreciate you, brother. Talk to you later.
For sure. Pepito?
2 hours.
I'm just saying. You gave yourself a round of applause. Yeah. I got no rounds of applause from you today.
You don't deserve any.
Ridiculous.
Hey, shot of the day goes to the fans, the New England fans, for pumping out the fog machine.
I did. My shot of the day goes to...
Thank you.
The Saints.
There you go.
No, I can you not? They're on top of the division again. It's been a long, long time since we can say they're in first place, because they normally don't even win the first game of the year, so they're not even tied. It's awesome. Tomorrow, turn the page, Tuesday, and we'll get into some of the storylines. The Bears should be overlooked. I'll explain why next on the Sports Hangover. Matt Moscona on ESPN New Orleans.